It's Super Bowl week, a good old-fashioned South Florida Super Bowl week. We've got it covered wall-to-wall, starting with our NFL writer, Ben Fisher, who's in to take a look ahead to the possible ramifications of a change in the schedule and back on the NFL season that was. Then we'll bring in our sports marketing guru, Terry Lefton, who's here to talk about a Super Bowl party circuit that's set to deliver as only Miami can. And we'll close with executive editor and publisher, Abe Madcore, and what he's watching in the week ahead. All that and whatever else comes up once we get talking here in the Newsroom of Sports Business Journal. I'm Bill King, and this is First Look. Well, we'll be heading into the first weekend of February, and you know what that means? It means the Super Bowl, or at least it's meant the Super Bowl for, 17 years. There's some conversation about whether that may be the case moving forward. Our Ben Fisher, along with lots of other stuff heading into this Super Bowl week, has a look at that in our issue. He joins me now. Ben, should that happen, we start off a round of bouncing and musical chairs, don't we? How likely is it, and what do you think the impact would be?
Yeah, maybe that's a good place to start, characterizing the likelihood of this. The entire article I wrote in today's magazine supposes that the NFL is successful in gaining a 17th regular season game in its contract negotiations with the NFL Players Association. And that's still a bit of a leap. The word is, I guess I would characterize it as they are very hopeful about it. They think they're as close to an expansion of the regular season calendar as they've been in a long time. So we'll just have to wait and see if that comes to pass. But the implications of that as far as the schedule for sports in January and February are so big that we thought it was worth fleshing that out and what it would mean and not mean, because no other sport could possibly afford to be on NFL postseason game day, particularly the Super Bowl. And the Super Bowl has been pretty stable for 17 straight years. But if that moved even 1 week further into February, it caused, I mean, chaos may be a strong word, but a lot of pretty heavy meetings all throughout the sports world.
Well, let's start breaking those down. Let's talk about those dominoes. Who's impacted and how?
Well, if it's just going to be 1 week, a 17th regular season game, which makes the regular season 18 games longer, and everything goes out 1 week, the two most obvious implications are the Pebble Beach Pro-Am would then be being played Super Bowl week. And, you know.
Yeah, you ain't going to have any pros at the Pro-Am.
Right. Or AMs.
Or AMs. Well, yeah. I guess it's really the AMs that you would lose.
Right.
You're not going to have any glitzy. It's the AMs. I'm sorry. The pros will be there. It's the glitzy AMs. It's the professional AMs that you lose.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, maybe they find a way to make that work, but I doubt it. And then the other thing is maybe a little less obvious, that the NHL All-Star Game, which is currently in the off week for the NFL, or Pro Bowl weekend,
right,
if you will, which nobody really fears, would then be on conference championship weekend.
Yeah, they'd have to bump.
Typically for the NHL, they've got to go.
Yeah, they're not going to do that.
As much as we talk about the all-powerful Super Bowl juggernaut, conference championship games are, you know, top five, top 10 rated broadcast for the year,
right,
too. So you got to stay away from that.
Well, unless you want to go that Saturday, I guess.
Right. I guess you could always do Saturday, but there's a reason those sort of tentpole events.
That's right. They tend to be on a Sunday.
And the weekend concept where you build up to with events on Friday and Saturday seems to really work well for the NBA and the NHL.
It does.
So that's relatively contained. But then things really get crazy if for some reason the NFL were to extend the Super Bowl 2 weeks. And all of my sources say that's not very likely, but we wanted to play that out and see what that looks
right.
like.
Well, just to tackle that for 1 second, I mean, the on the league side, I could see them saying it's not all that likely. On the player side, I almost wonder. If I'm gonna give you that extra game, and that is a concession by the players. I mean, yes, it's more money in the pool, but I think more games are always going to be considered, especially in an era of health and safety, are going to be considered to be a concession, and so I have to get something back. One of those things that I might want back is that extra bye week, right? To again lessen the impact of those health and safety,
the health and safety
issues, wear and tear.
Yes, yes. I'm told that the tug and pull on maybe adding a second bye is that maybe that lessens the wear and tear concern for players if they get a second off week during the season. The problem on the league side is broadcasters aren't going to like that. People in the media industry tell me that a second bye week would dilute the schedule to the point where you'd have some weekends that wouldn't really be a marquee game. Right now, the NFL schedule, you know, even on some of your so-called bad weeks, there's always some game that just jumps out at you as that 4:30 doubleheader slot. Yeah. You know, but
somebody would have to show me that because it's all relative, right? I mean, there will be a best game of the day. And the odds of them all being inconsequential and nobody being able to go on Sunday Night Football is not great. And oh, by the way, Sunday Night Football is built upon expectations, right? Not reality. So you deal with that
right.
already.
Right. So anyway, that's the tug and pull in the second week. But I don't think it's impossible that that we end up actually pushing the Super Bowl two
right.
weeks, the President's Day weekend. That blows out Daytona 500, biggest event in motorsports.
Yeah.
And that also blows out the NBA All-Star Game,
right.
which has been on President's Day weekend every year since, you know, going way back, except for the lockout seasons when it was pushed a week. That's when things really get wild because, you know, who's guessed what those properties do as a response to that. And it also moves the entire NFL postseason back a couple
right.
weeks, which has implications on the front end.
And oh, by the way, ESPN's not going to like the idea of moving an NBA All-Star game, and Fox is not going to like the idea, most likely, of moving the Daytona 500.
Right. You mean Turner with
the That's right. Right. That's what
right,
I yeah,
right.
sorry.
Yeah. And that's why I think the story, you know, it's all speculative. Not a lot of facts in this story, I'll be the first to admit. But it's such an interesting game to play because, you know, historically, the Super Bowl moved around a fair bit. But it's been so stable since 2004, and it's landed in February for the first time. And really, that's when the big money has come in.
Right.
When the Super Bowl was bouncing around in the 70s and 80s, the implications were lower. But now a lot of money, a lot of strategy has been baked into a calendar that, you know, has been stable, but there's no guarantee it will be in the future. And where does the NBA put an All-Star game? Maybe they jump in and do that in the Pro Bowl weekend. You know, what does Daytona do?
And then where does hockey go if they do that?
Then where does hockey go? You know, this is high-stakes stuff. Oh,
right.
By the way, something I forgot at the start of this, looking just a quarter step out of the sports world into the entertainment world, the Oscars is the Sunday after the Super Bowl.
That's right.
Oscars is going to have to move again if the Super Bowl moves a week. And then you start stepping on each other. There's only so many days in February, the sweeps month. It's high winter viewership, high stakes to all these decisions. It's a really interesting chess piece. Moving
yeah.
around and
yeah, really good stuff. And you dug in a little bit into the ad market, right? Some concerns about getting that deep into the ad calendar is probably not a great thing for some brands.
Right. And that was some of the more counterintuitive, maybe not counterintuitive, but the non-obvious thing is the effect on the front end. Because what this would mean is that the college football playoff would then be put up against the end of the NFL regular season rather than the start of the postseason. And that's a good thing, generally speaking. For the CFP, but part of this is that the NFL is also talking about adding a wild card team in each division, which would add a third wild card game of both Saturday and Sunday of the wild card weekend, which a couple of people have said that is another 100 to 200 million in ad revenue, and 2 days before the CFP championship, maybe depending on how this works out, that's just a lot of money to be asking out of the marketplace just 2 weeks after Christmas. So things get super crowded there early in January too, potentially.
One of the great takeaways, though, I think from the whole conversation, all those conversations you had with anybody, was that when it really comes down to it, when you're dealing with an issue like this with the NFL, whether you're the networks or whether you're the ad community or whoever you might be, save perhaps the Players Association on something like this, whoever you might be that's dealing with it and worrying about other impacts, you go into that room. And the first thing that you wonder is, but what does the NFL want? Because that's probably what's going to happen, right? Was that Ed Gorin that said that?
Yeah, Ed Gorin said, you know, we never went into a meeting where we thought it was really a negotiation. It was we were being told what needed to happen to close the deal. And somebody else, the quote didn't make it, but they said, you know, when it comes to TV properties, NFL is number one, and really there are no number twos. So everything moves as a result of them. And possibly, obviously the players have a say in this.
Right.
Possibly the broadcasters can shift some thinking a little bit, but even they have very limited ability to influence this. It's all reactionary for everybody else.
How about we look both back and forward? Let's start with back. Postmortem on the season.
Yeah, as we've been putting the Super Bowl in-depth package together that's running today, we've been thinking a lot of big thoughts. And I think my final conclusion, I'd be curious to hear what you make of this, is that the ratings number, the viewership narrative is really all that matters, because this season was not without its problem points for the NFL. You know, the Kaepernick workout, whether it was his fault or the league's that didn't work out, it brought that issue back to a head for a week.
Right.
Antonio Brown's drama at the beginning of the season and his continued problems off the field.
Right.
That's maybe black eye for the league's not right, but it shined a light on a lot of the unpleasantness in the league. you know, there's been some other things. Oh, the fight in Cleveland was a huge storyline for a while, but none of those seem to, and Robert Kraft's legal jeopardy in the offseason, but all of those things.
They all went away.
They went away, right? So we were trying to think, why didn't they really like take over the season narrative like some things have in the past? And my theory on that is that viewership is still going up. As long as you can say that more people watched this weekend than did the weekend last year, the equivalent weekend last year, ultimately everything's going to be fine. So that sort of like washes away the problems, or at least contains the effect of all the drama that wasn't necessarily that good for the league, but no one seemed to remember it 3 days later.
No, it's interesting. For all those things that made Roger Goodell an embattled commissioner at one point, or at least perceived to be one, some of that may have gone back to some chess pieces that moved around with Las Vegas and Oakland and a lot of those conversations and a little bit of fractioned within ownership. So maybe that's where a lot of that came from, but sure, it sure looks an awful lot different when ratings are up 5% now for the commissioner.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good point, that there's less incentive for high-placed sources in the league, if we shall say use that term of art, to talk negatively about everybody. Things seem to be pretty positive on the league and club side of things. And of course, they're all, you know, working in concert vis-a-vis the union as well right now.
Speaking of the union, big offseason, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot of positivity around the NFL right now. They love the Super Bowl matchup. Miami is going to be a hell of a week. I'm
right
down there Tuesday morning. Let me know if anyone out there wants to get a cup of coffee or say hello. I'm looking for things to do. But it's going to be a dramatic few months in between now and the next kickoff. I mean, just the obvious things are Raiders move to Vegas. That's happened officially now. And then they'll open up that brand new stadium, SoFi Stadium in L.A. And boy, you could do a lot worse if you're a reporter covering the NFL than just camp out on those two organizations right now. I mean, in some senses, nothing's more important in the NFL than the success of that whole L.A. strategy. And it's an open question right now how successful it is. Then, of course, the CBA. You know, last week I reported that conventional wisdom is either this deal gets done by like middle of March or we're going out to the wire
right
a year from now,
or right
late into next season. So if it's St. Patrick's Day and there's no NFL union contract, buckle up. It's been pretty positive so far, but it could get bad in a hurry.
Yeah, well, they are talking about some big stuff. When you're talking about adding a regular season game and some of the other issues, some health and safety issues, I think that there are some of the hallmarks of something that might take a little longer. At the same time, you just still – I still, as somebody who's watched sports labor unions for quite a while – I still don't get the sense that this is a union that really is prepared to go to the wall on a whole lot of issues that would be true pressure points for the league. So I don't know. Tea leaves. I don't think we see labor strife. We haven't heard some of the drum beats that you usually hear, but I guess that remains to be seen, and it's going to play out over the next few months.
Yeah, I mean, look, to be clear, if I had to characterize things now, I'd say, you know, they've made a lot of progress and things are generally pretty positive, certainly by historical comparisons. But I just think, you know, you have to be prepared for the possibility or the fact that everything's easy until you get to the hard stuff. And they haven't really gotten to the hard stuff yet. And, you know, I've been told there really hasn't been movement on the fundamental top line revenue split since October. And that's something the players are pretty insistent on. So I think you're probably right. At this point, that actual work stoppage remains highly unlikely, but just, you know, these things can change in a hurry. And with the fact is the deal has still another full year. So there's not a lot of the players might ultimately come around and make some concessions, but they don't feel like they have to until, you know, there's real leverage on one side or the other.
Well, good.
Calendar doesn't provide that leverage yet.
Right. Well, no, it's, and you made the point before, it's not here until it's here. And I remember covering lots of baseball negotiations where it always came down to the wire. So, you know, that hasn't always been the case with the NFL. But anyway, it'll be an interesting week down in Miami. Ben Fisher on the NFL. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bill.
Take care. I hope you're enjoying First Look. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to leave us a 5-star review to help others find this podcast. If you have any suggestions for the show or just want to say hello, feel free to send us an email at firstlook@sportsbusinessjournal.com. That's firstlook@sportsbusinessjournal.com. Look forward to hearing from you. For this next segment, I'm not going to do the usual setup. I thought about some things. I thought maybe we'd hire a DJ thought about maybe an ice sculpture, but neither one of those are in the first look budget. So I'm just going to bring in our marketing guru, Terry Lefton, and I'm going to open up by tapping into his memory banks. Terry, your first Super Bowl party. You remember it?
Oh, my gosh.
This one's unscripted. I did not prep him on this.
No, I'm on Super Bowl 29, but can I remember my first, and those are consecutive, can I remember my first party? No, I can't. I'd have to go back. I have to go back and look. I do have a memory of an early Super Bowl, which was, I don't know the number, but it was Oakland, Washington, and it was so long ago, your press credential was your little lapel pin.
Uh-huh.
And after the game, none of the stages and taking people into separate rooms, they had all the coaches and players were standing on boxes in some room.
That's right.
Just coach or player and talk to him. And I remember asking the winning coach, Tom Flores, if something ameliorated something else. And he said, "Are you calling me an asshole?"
yeah, it is. It is. I think the show has overtaken the game, you know, and back in my in my regular sports writing days when I was off trying to write about things on the field, I remember just in all honesty, I never fond of the Super Bowl because it was always so hard to find anything different than anybody else. And it is just this giant gang of this sort of mob of media that shifts from place to place. You know what, though, in a little way, I think I didn't mean it this way, but we have a little transition there, don't we? Because as we head to Miami and we think about Super Bowl parties, there is a bit of that giant gang moving from place to place, isn't there?
Yes, it is. It's funny. As is my wont, since I'm an Eagles fan, I was watching some highlights from the Eagles-Pats Super Bowls from a few days ago. Both, they're all wired up. So both when Coach Peterson met Belichick on the field pregame and when he's talking to the refs, he keeps saying, "Is there a game in here somewhere?" You know, he's so tired of everything that goes around it. But yeah, Miami, obviously, look, it's a destination city. No one's confusing the last three sites. You know, Houston, Minneapolis, best Super Bowl of all time, in my opinion, of course, and Atlanta as destination cities. This one, people want to go to. They want to be there. There's, depending on who you talk to, I'd say the people I talk to, 30 to 50% more demand for hospitality. And we've seen what the tickets are. I think the last I checked, $5,000 or $6,000 gets you a bad ticket.
Right.
And, you know, that'll only go up from here.
So let's look a little bit at that hospitality structure and what it looks like as we head to Miami and what people are watching, because the marketing business certainly has changed. So is the way that people look at this changing or can we even tell because it is Miami and there is that incredible demand?
Yeah, well, that was my sort of voyage of discovery on what I wrote this week, because, you know, I've been writing about parties for quite a long time.
Yes.
And, you know, it's always fun to sort of get the color and what are you doing and who's spending what and who's putting money behind what.
The ice sculpture.
Yeah. Well, you know, I forgot to use my usual Super Bowl line, which is it's the Super Bowl where your next shrimp is always 10 minutes away. but my whole thing on this year's story, because I've been writing about him for a long time, was, okay, we're in this era of absolutely heightened the demand for return on investment, absolutely heightened insistence on analytics and metrics. So can you apply any of that rigor, apply any of that discipline to a party or a large event? I mean, sometimes they're both. And that was what this week's story was all about. I think the answer is we're getting better, but generally no, which probably is the answer against marketing. Anyone that is writing about marketing for the first time, I always say, you know, welcome to marketing. There are no answers. We just spend money.
And they will spend a lot of money. Who are some of the bigger spenders this year? What are some of the places to be?
Oh, it's kind of who you would expect. Pepsi, AT&T, Verizon doing a combination of Budweiser AB, doing a combination of private and public parties, concerts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The interesting thing about Miami is it is so spread out. You know, the fan zone's downtown, but I would say most of the activity is really – up and down Collins and on Miami Beach there. I think it's, going to be a zoo. I don't know. It's something beyond a zoo by the time the weekend comes around when you get to the really, like, I think the Gronk Beach party is 5 hours and it'll cost you around $500. And, you know, it goes up and down from there. So
right.
It's like a kitchen or a bathroom. If you're familiar with getting one of those, spend as much as you want. There's no limit.
So what's the high end?
I'd always go to the philanthropic ones first, And Giving Back Foundation always has a really nice one. Big game, big give. They're having one on an island called Star Island.
Right.
And I think it's near J-Lo's house and near A-Rod's house. Tickets start at $3,000. They're honoring Jim Brown. And they generally raise seven figures a year. So that's pretty nice. And then, depends on whether you want to go public or private. Bud's got a whole bunch of concerts. AT&T, DirecTV have got concerts three nights in a row. Which headliner you want to see on Saturday night? You want to see Maroon 5? You want to see Lady Gaga? Big concerts, small concerts, in-between concerts. It's there. I mean, as I said, I was trying to find out if anyone really had a handle on how to do ROI on this. And I think, largely, yeah, we can get some qualitative stuff done. And, the woman I talked to at AT&T was very good. She talked about it as a brand warming moment because they're streaming the Lady Gaga concert. So, of course, you got to opt in, data capture. Then they start marketing to you afterwards. Of course, you want to see the replay, so maybe they'll get more data then. And then they'll start selling you their new pay streaming service and blah, 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 blah. So I think we're still not at the era where it's, definitive marketing, but, we're not at that era for too many other things either. They're getting better, and they some of them do some pre and post. And as the guys at, Chris Weil at Momentum for Verizon, or Nick Kelly at ABI would tell me, it's a hell of a lot easier when it's your own event,
right? Well, that's one of the things that
you can control the content. Of course, everybody wants nothing but content these days. And then you can track, sales lists, orders, blah blah. That's relatively easy. Once you start getting out of that, and you start, doing big things and letting other people sponsor, or you're a sponsor of something else, it's pretty tough. And like, even Nick told me, he had a little sponsorship by his standards, the Gronk Beach Party. He's like, we're sponsoring it, but it's really because a bunch of our people probably want to go.
Right.
It's pretty hard to track that.
Right. It's very hard to track that.
As a big brand, you're conspicuous by your absence at some of these events. And of course, everybody wants content. You can generate it off some of these events. So, and it was funny when I was talking to the promoters of the guys, they do both the Gronk Beach Party and the Shaq Funhouse party. I think that's only 2,000 people the night before. And they're like, well, yeah, of course, we're back to those old things, media impressions, whatever. But if we can get one killer photo of, Gronk or Shaq holding a sponsor's product on the stage at the party, the sponsors will tell us it's worth it.
Well, it was interesting. I talked to Nick Kelly before the Super Bowl in Atlanta last year, and he was talking about the shift of AB's approach at the Super Bowl and the realization that, owning an event was really what it was all about for them, and thus the concert series, because it takes you out of those concerns where here you are, you're in Miami, and somebody all of a sudden would like to go to this or would like to go to that or would like to go to the other thing. And so now how do you put that together? How do you put it together on the fly? That became a real problem over the years, didn't it?
Yeah, and it shifted again this year. Normally, I am used to them doing one big brand across Super Bowl. And this year, of course, they're doing Bud Light because that's their NFL brand. But huge push behind Bud Light Seltzer. Pretty big push behind a Babe Rosé. So what if I told you 10 years ago that Anheuser-Busch would be pushing a can of canned rosé at the Super Bowl? What would you? Also, they're doing some stuff for Stella Artois. So it's interesting. They're putting them, I think that's. I hope it's true because I wrote it. That's their new strategy when it comes to big events. Don't reserve it for one brand. Make sure they get out of each other's way, but do three or four or even five brands, and that's the way they're going.
A lot of interesting stuff. The as we head into the Super Bowl, you're coming off the licensing show, right? What'd you come back with? I don't mean literally.
Well, out in Vegas last weekend, and. It's usually a week later, so I'm able to get a little better read on, who the best Super Bowl winner is. But I still was able to do it, and I think I went into that show thinking that they would have preferred Green Bay over San Francisco, but they all said it's a wash. So now
yeah.
We know who it is. They seem pretty damn happy. I mean, Kansas City would be a huge winner. And I'll find out next week who's got the better if wins. I'm sure it will be Kansas City. I mean, a team that hasn't won in 50 years, they've got a big fan base across the Midwest. a quarterback that absolutely is a national figure and getting more so. I think that if Kansas City wins, that's got a chance of being one of the best ever. The other big story out there, because it was Vegas, and you know what, even if it wasn't Vegas, I would have pursued this, was the Oakland / Las Vegas Raiders.
Right.
They will be the biggest after Kansas City if they win, gets done killing it. I had made reference in my story to a sea of red. Oakland / Las Vegas Raiders will be the biggest story because, you know, new stadium, national, if not global brand but for the Raiders. That's going to be huge. And they'll have the draft to start pushing sales in April. So look for a lot of black and white and silver in their future. I think that's got a pretty good chance of being the number one seller next season. With the possible exception of how well Kansas City does.
And if you're I'm curious now that you raised that, if you're one of those many Raider fans across the country, forget those in Northern California, if you're one of those many Raiders fans across the country, do you need new gear when they move to Vegas? What do you think the consumer will say?
Interesting, because for the past year or so, the league has permitted them to sell. It's almost generic. It just says Raiders.
Right.
It doesn't say Vegas. It just says Raiders. So I've never seen that before. So I guess that's answering that question. Now, I guess you'd want to know, are we continuing to sell that? They will be able to start selling Las Vegas Raiders products April 1st. So we'll see that then. And it'll be interesting to see if that dormant fan base wakes up. And, you know, the same thing for San Francisco. Obviously, they've got a huge fan base from all those wins. How many of them, if they win especially, will come out and start buying and supporting the team? But there's no question that Oakland is a national, if not global team, along with, you know, the Cowboys, the Steelers, the Packers, a few others.
Well, I know when it comes time to figure it out, I'm turning to our marketing guru, Terry Lefton. Terry, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Bill.
All right. Thanks, bud. First Look is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're a fan of our podcast, subscribe on your mobile device to have First Look delivered right to your phone every Monday morning. And now, as we typically do to close First Look, I'll bring in our executive editor and publisher, Abe Madcore, to talk about what we're watching around the sports world. Abe, what do you got as we head into this Super Bowl week?
Well, if people are down in Miami, I hope they reach out to us. Love to be on the ground, see them for a cup of coffee or run into them at the media center. But it's going to be a big week for the NFL. You've talked a lot about it already, so yeah. I don't need to rehash any of it. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see a lot of the storylines coming out. I think they've had a good season, the league has, and now they're well prepared to really tackle CBA in media. Those are some interesting things. A couple of things I'm paying attention to, Bill. You know, I was intrigued by a couple of things out of Bill Simmons this week.
Mm-hmm.
One about Spotify's plan to build a podcast network. We've read about that, but The Ringer could be one of their acquisition targets. And, you know, everybody in our newsroom is pretty religiously devoted to listening to some sort of audio from The Ringer. And so it shows the value proposition that Bill Simmons has built over a period of time, and I commend him for it. The other thing is reading that Bill's going to partner with HBO potentially on a new series of music documentaries similar to the themes he did with ESPN's 30 for 30, and I think that's a pretty interesting entree for Simmons.
It is.
There. So he's a very, very, I would say, active and smart entrepreneur that I have a lot of respect for. Second thing I'm watching, Bill, Zion Williamson's return and how that could jumpstart some of these really kind of slower NBA ratings. They've been behind all season long from really opening night. He played Wednesday night and it gave him one of their best non-Christmas Day rating numbers. I think they have him for about four more times. ESPN does at least. They could add more games. We all know the ratings for the NBA across all of their partners have been down for the last couple of years.
They do need a jolt. And the storylines that we thought, we saw all those movement of players and there was all this anticipation that was going to generate excitement, whether it's because those guys aren't playing on the right nights or whatever it might be, it hasn't.
Yeah.
Now they got it.
Right.
They are now, again, it's a good week to get it, right? They've got the dead weekend here of the NFL this past weekend. So good timing to have Zion come back. But can that carry them? Can that get people interested in the league in general, the broader league? That's an interesting question.
And, you know, NCAA convention ending in Anaheim. Michael Smith's been all over this, but Mark Emmert's comments on name, image, and likeness and trying to say, hey, either we're going to get this done, hey, but we also may get something done with Congress or collectively. But it seemed that they are trying to really lay the groundwork for the next Board of Governors recommendations or the next recommendations to the board in April. So keep your eye out for that. But it did seem like more people left Anaheim in the convention with more questions.
This is so complicated.
Very complicated.
It's one thing to talk about the principle. It's another thing to talk about where that goes. And then it's yet another to talk about what the fallout is. What starts off as this very principled conversation, honest to God, I come back and I look at it. I still keep looking at two things. The overall value of the player. Again, the property has tremendous value. The property does not exist without the player. But what's the value of that player as an individual? I don't think we know that. I don't think we have any idea. What we do know is there's a vast chasm in every program between number one and number two and number 48 and number 73 on those rosters. So how do you deal with all that? And then on top of that, all the questions of we're going to start paying these guys how, by who, how is that monitored, what's cheating, what's not cheating. I honestly don't even know where to start.
Well, as you read, I mean, I think you saw that they're trying to break it down into three areas, an individual licensing, a group license, and one around, I think they're calling a work product, which means something outside of their sport. So it does seem that they're setting up buckets. Your point and your scenarios are far broader. Difficult conversations, of course, Val Ackerman and Gene Smith leading that working group that will make the recommendations. And finally, you know, I thought our story this week, you wrote it, Bill. You know, we've been hearing for a long time, every panel I've been on, every conversation I've been on, so much advocacy and proponents for legalized online sports betting because they believe that's going to drive engagement, which means higher ratings for sports programming. I've been pushing our research group to try to find some numbers to see if that's really true. You've got some numbers this week that show that the early results are mixed. It's a small sample and it's very early, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I did too. And that's the way we looked at it also. And the one thing is that where we really hinged the thing was Pennsylvania. Because you know what you had in Pennsylvania? You had widely available online sports betting for the entirety of the season. Like if you wanted to bet in Philadelphia on your phone, if you wanted to bet in Pittsburgh or Altoona or wherever on your phone, pretty easy to do it if you had your mind set on it. So barriers were down, they were gone. And then you worry about comparables. Give you an example. You look at numbers in Indiana, TV ratings in Indianapolis for the NFL way down. Well, the Colts went from being a playoff team to being absolutely just, you know, a stink bomb. So when that happens, of course, ratings are going to drop. You really couldn't draw any conclusion from that. But it was really apples to apples in Pennsylvania. The Steelers had almost an identical season to last year. The Eagles had almost an identical season to last year. They both appeared on Sunday Night Football exactly the same number of times that they did last year. And we didn't see a ratings increase. And our story dug into a lot of the, you know, look, and all of this is really just a guess, right? Why? I don't know. It's hard to prove the negative in terms of why. But there are some logical assumptions. One of them is that particularly for the early adopters, you probably, if you're betting now, there's a very good chance you were betting last year. If you were betting, especially in September and October, you may have been betting illegally with a bookie. You may have been betting offshore, but you were probably betting already and you were watching games. And so there's no real expectation of a big, you know, a big swing there. What would come later is with the casual fan. Does the casual fan watch more games? The casual, not the casual fan, the casual better. Does that drive them? And that's what a lot of people around the sports books are saying. But I'll tell you, there's one thing that they aren't saying that I think is well worth thinking about. If this is largely about millennials and Gen Z and males, single, you know, guys in their 20s, and that's who the core of the online betting consumer is. I don't know that there's an assumption that they have to watch the games they bet on. You know, if they're watching fewer games now, if they're watching less of games now, but they're still very engaged fans. Think about all those things that we heard from some experts when we were looking at the future of the fan and the millennials and what that's going to mean 20 years from now. We heard a lot of people talking about, well, you know what? Don't assume they're not as avid a fan. They just watch less. They consume in different ways. They may consume in different ways even though they're betting too. And I don't think we know that. And so this one, since that right now is who's betting, maybe there's a connection there.
Early days. They're preaching patience and saying that the numbers could – it's a long story to tell.
It is.
So thanks, Bill.
That's going to do it for this week. For Abe Madcore, Terry Lefton, Ben Fisher, and our producer, Chris Mason, I'm Bill King, and this has been First Look.